Hey, what's going on? Welcome back to Philadelphia Eagles Talk. I'm your host, Kevin Woodman, and today I have some very big NFL news that is going to be heavily involved with what the Eagles are going to be doing this offseason, and that's the huge Matthew Stafford trade to the Los Angeles Rams for Jared Goff to the Detroit Lions, as well as a boatload of picks. Now, this trade really doesn't have anything to do with the Eagles, but that and some other coaching hires that I'm going to go over really should tell you guys a lot about what possibly could happen with Carson Wentz. I'm going to go out, I'm going to make as far as a prediction that I think that these big moves, I think that there's a lot of signs out there pointing to Carson Wentz possibly becoming an Indianapolis Colt, and I'm going to go over those things today. But let's talk about the Matthew Stafford trade to the Rams. He easily took over as the biggest name in this trade. I mean, there's some huge free agent possibility names out there, some huge trade possibilities out there when it comes to the quarterback position. I don't think I could ever remember this many high-profile quarterbacks. I mean, the league has really changed. It went from a time where you wanted to lock up a young quarterback, and that was gold. You weren't letting them go anywhere, to what the league looks like now, which is quarterbacks are going to be jumping teams like the NBA. I mean, it almost seems like, and I said this in previous podcasts, it almost seems like the NFL is taking their cues from the NBA for some reason, at least as far as how they market their stars or the power that the stars have over things that happen in each individual team. And I think really the first case that we saw like that, this is something that's been developing, and it's something that I've noticed, which is, you know, it doesn't typically happen in the NFL. NFL players never really called their shots before. They don't even get guaranteed contracts most of the time. I mean, most of the way the NFL is structured, it's really structured in ways to benefit the owners. But the players, I don't know if it's the players that are driving this or if it's the league that's doing this through marketability purposes. I really don't know. But it really seems like the NFL players now are controlling things, especially the big ones, the quarterbacks, which everybody knows the quarterback position. I mean, that is without a doubt the most important position in all of sports, not just football. It almost seems like these guys are realizing their power and they're really flexing their muscles, because it's insane to think that in one offseason we could see so many young stars, so many young developing stars in this league change teams. I mean, say what you want about Jared Goff. Maybe he wasn't living up to the hype of what he was projected to be a couple years ago as a former number one pick. But whatever you want to say about Jared Goff, this is a guy who's played, 4 years in the league, and two of those years he was a Pro Bowler. He went to a Super Bowl as a starting quarterback. I mean, how many guys can say that on their resume through the first 4 or 5 years of their career? Multiple Pro Bowls. I mean, I think he even won, Most Improved Player. I know his first year was a disaster, but I think his second year won Most Improved Player. I mean, he has a bevy of long things that he's done throughout his career already. Player of the Weeks, Player of the Month, in the NFC. He's done a ton of things that you could say this guy is a very good or a very talented quarterback. I mean, there's a lot. First pick overall, if that doesn't say enough, I don't know what does. So that guy, only 4 or 5 years into his career, is gone already. He's already gotten traded. And like I said, I know that a lot of people look at it like, well, the first year Jared Goff played, he was terrible. Then Sean McVay got there and he solved the puzzle and he fixed them. And I think now a lot of people can look at what's happened to Jared Goff over the last two seasons or so and say that, you know, maybe teams are picking up around the league on what Sean McVay is doing to basically hide Jared Goff. And I'm not saying that I necessarily agree with that. I think Jared Goff is still, I mean, at the very least, I heard a comparison. I think he's like a version, he's like a Kirk Cousins. You know what I mean? I don't think he's a guy that you can ever expect him to carry a team to a Super Bowl, but he's very functional. He's going to be a very good starting quarterback in this league for a long time, in my opinion. But he is going to Detroit, so who knows? I mean, that's where players go to die or retire at 30, like Calvin Johnson and Barry Sanders did. So it's really hard to say. I really think that Stafford got out by essentially saying, if you don't get rid of me, I'm going to retire. Like, I seriously think that that was the move. And I think the first two guys that tried that, Barry Sanders and Charles, Megatron, I think that they said that and they called their bluff and then they just retired on him. So I really think that they decided that they could get a boatload of picks for Stafford. And I think it's a really good trade. I really think that it's going to work out good for both teams, at least as good as it can. I mean, we all know Detroit's going to blow all those picks. You know what I mean? There's been multiple occasions throughout league history where teams have gotten a boatload of picks for something, and it hasn't done anything for that team. Like, look at the Washington football team, which obviously they weren't named that back then, but look at what all the picks they got for the Ricky Williams trade in the draft. The Saints trade their entire draft. I mean, if you have two full drafts worth of picks, don't you think that should start like a dynasty? Well, it didn't. I don't really remember the Washington team having a dynasty after they received all those picks. I don't remember them. I mean, look at how the it's happened a lot of times throughout history. I'm not going to go through all of them, but ultimately, it's no guarantee just because the Lions, and we all know that the Lions haven't been a very good franchise. So it's no guarantee to think that that's going to work out for them. I think it's the exact opposite. I think that we're all going to look at the Lions like they're the Lions. They might hit a pick or two, and it might bring them to respectability. But I think Jared Goff being in Detroit is going to be a big problem. I don't think he's going to do a very good job there, just based off of the fact that it just doesn't work well. I mean, Kirk Cousins did okay in Washington, but once he got to a better team, I think he's doing a little bit better now that he's in a better situation in Minnesota. But either way, I mean, I'm not going to go too much time into that. I do feel like that Stafford does put the Rams in a position, though, they could possibly compete for a Super Bowl next year. I think we all look at this team. I mean, they're running the ball so well with their rookie running back to end the season this year. I mean, they drafted several rookie running backs the last couple years, but it seems like they finally got that puzzle solved because Cam Akers was really turning it on to the end of the season. So I feel like they have the franchise running back. They obviously have great receivers there. They have a very good offensive coach. They were run blocking really well too. It wasn't just the running back that was doing well. I mean, their offensive line was playing really well. So I think that, I mean, honestly, I felt like their defense, I know they were number one in the league in points allowed, but I thought, even aside from that, watching them, they were so disruptive, and I really thought that the Rams defense was the best defense in the league this last year. Two of the biggest superstars at their own positions in Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey. I think without a doubt that defense is going to be a problem for years to come. I think their secondary is just loaded. I mean, I really feel like their entire secondary is one of the best secondaries in the league. I really just, every time I watched the Rams, I just was nothing but impressed with that defense. And I think now the offense is going to match. So they're going to be a real issue next year. I think Stafford especially is going to play the best football of his career because obviously Sean McVay is a genius. And I think that Stafford's light years ahead of Goff. I mean, when you look at the parameter of the trade, when you look at how many picks, I mean, Jared Goff was quoted after the fact saying, I want to go to a team that wants me, which is kind of a negative statement. If they wanted you, they would have did an even swap. Or if they wanted you that badly, they would have probably gave up something. They had to take you. They had to take two additional firsts and a second to take you on. It wasn't that they wanted you. They wanted the picks, I'm sure, but they also had to take on all your salary, which I'm sure they didn't want, because that's really at the end of the day what the Rams were trying to get rid of. They wanted to get rid of that salary, and they got in a guy who's probably better, I would say without a doubt better, a guy who's known for 5,000 yards in a season already in his NFL career. But I mean, Goff has already thrown for 4,600, so you're splitting hairs a little bit. But ultimately, Stafford has done something that only a handful of quarterbacks have ever done, and that says a lot. Stafford physically has a much better arm. I think he's shown more ability to win comeback games in his career. I mean, I know in Detroit he probably hasn't won a ton of games, and he's been on the wrong side of a lot of very public losses to guys like Aaron Rodgers and stuff like that. But ultimately, he did have a season I remember where he was just, I think it was one of their better seasons when he was there, where he had like 8 comeback wins or something crazy like that. I really don't remember exactly. Maybe it was like 6, but it was, he had that at some point in his career. I know lately they were blowing leads, but I think that he was kind of checked out in Detroit. So now that he goes to LA, I think he's gonna be rejuvenated. I think he's gonna play as hard as he's ever played in his life, because he has an opportunity to win a Super Bowl. It's funny, there was a quote that that he didn't want to go to New England, which it's like, dude, if you want to go win, which is the reason, let's be honest, I mean, I've seen a lot of things in Detroit that he's, going to family's houses in Detroit of fans, and he's been very active in the community and very supportive of the Detroit community. So it's really hard for me. I'm sure he loves that city as much as you can, considering that he hasn't had a lot of success there. But he was drafted, he spent his whole career there. I'm sure he loves the fans there. So it had to take a lot for him to want to move on. And I think that really he just wanted to win. He didn't want to be thought of as a loser for his entire NFL career. What a way to turn that around than to go to the Patriots. If that was really an option, if that was really on the table, why would you turn that down? I mean, the Rams are great, though. I'm not going to lie. They said they just were at a Super Bowl, even though they lost. But if you really wanted to flip that around and be known as a winner, going to New England is a pretty good leg up. And the only reason I could think of, aside from maybe he just didn't want to go through, you know, I mean, obviously Belichick has a reputation. They're very strict. They're very, you know, it's a different world when you go to New England. Maybe that was part of it. But I really think that if you really wanted to win, you could you know, deal with all that, and you'd be guaranteed to probably be in a Super Bowl within the next year or two. So I don't know why he would say, I want to leave Detroit because I finally want to win, and be like, well, we could get you to New England. He's like, nah, slow to pump the brakes. Like, I don't want to win that much. Like, I don't understand. Like, why would you completely pass up the opportunity to probably, I think that if you put him on the Patriots, they'd probably be a Super Bowl favorite, a top five Super Bowl favorite, based off of they still have a really strong defense, and they have a lot of money. I know that their offensive weapon, if he's looking at the Patriots right now and saying, like, I don't want to throw to those guys. I'd much rather throw to, you know, they have a ton of weapons in L.A. and a great offensive-minded coach. If he's looking at the situation and saying, well, I'd rather go to that one because of the weapons, Patriots have a lot of money. I would think that they're going to go out and spend some of it this year on some weapons. But, you know, you never know because they've been cheap. They've been, you know, consistently cheap. I think that's part of the reputation of the Patriots, too, is if you want to come there, they basically take it like, look, if you want to come here, you're going to come here for less because that's the Patriot way. Even Tom Brady, the greatest of all time, took way less than his value. So I feel like maybe that's, you know, maybe he just didn't want to be discounted. I really don't know. I think that if he thinks that maybe he would have went there and they probably wouldn't have gave him the weapons because they didn't give Cam Newton weapons. And you saw everybody turn on Cam Newton in this offseason or this entire season, like it was Cam Newton's fault that he went to a team. He had no weapons around him. He had no offseason to learn the offense. It was a very tricky, difficult offense, which is typically how the Patriots... I mean, the Patriots, it takes like a decade to learn that offense, and they expected him to learn it in one shortened offseason with no training camp, no preseason. Just get out there and play, and you're supposed to light it up with Jacoby Myers as your number one receiver. No tight ends, barely any running back. Like, their receiving core, their weaponry there is pretty atrocious. Julian Edelman didn't really even play the entire year. So he was supposed to go there and just like what? Like put, I mean, it's to the point like you didn't know after the first 2 weeks what the game plan was with Cam Newton, that they were just going to use his legs. After the Seattle game, what was the NFL? Was there a mystery around the Patriots offense? It was quarterback power, trick plays, get Cam Newton the ball and let him run with the ball. I mean, you can't, you know, I mean, it's like how long can you play that charade? And I watched the Patriots enough to see that their receiving core, I really like to have a fast young slot receiver. I forget his name. He came from the Cardinals. He couldn't catch a ball to save his life. Every time Cam, he was getting like 10 targets a game, and he was catching maybe three of them, even if he was wide open because of all his speed. So it was definitely a bad connection there. So with all that being said, there's and this is how I'm going to try to bring this back to Philadelphia, because there's a lot of signs that suggests that Carson Wentz is going to get traded as well. And I think Deshaun Watson's probably the next big domino to fall, but I don't know if there's a deadline with Deshaun. I know there's a deadline with Carson. And I think that Carson's deadline is a little bit more pressing because it starts at the start of the new year. I think the Eagles owe him like $10 million right out the gate. And it's a bit strange. You know, he hasn't said anything. But the biggest names of all the quarterbacks, and let's focus on the young guys here because there's some really interesting ones. Deshaun Watson, obviously, he's publicly requested a trade, which I think that the second that comes out, it weakens the team's position. And J.J. Watt as well, by the way. But once those public trade requests comes out, I really think it weakens. And Deshaun's doing a brilliant job of weakening the I think the Texans might get less for Deshaun Watson in his prime, 26, 20, whatever he is, than the Rams had to give up for Stafford. Like, honestly, like I don't think, because Deshaun is doing such a good job of weakening that team's position by basically coming out every opportunity, whether it's on his you know, his Instagrams or whatever, on his social media, and saying, I want out of here, I don't care, I'm not playing for you guys again. Him doing that is going to basically, you know, it's going to really reduce, you know, what teams are going to give up for him, because it's like teams know, it's like blood in the water now. Teams know everybody wants out of Houston. J.J. Watt as well. I mean, he's a guy, Hall of Famer, still has a lot of good football left in him. He's going to get traded for next to nothing. He's going to get traded for maybe they'll get a first round pick for him. It's because these guys all doing this mass exodus are definitely going to be changing, you know, what Houston really is going to likely get back. I mean, typically if a team is trading star players of that caliber, it's to the point where you would expect them to get like like 10 first round picks and just completely be able to overhaul the roster. Obviously, I'm embellishing, but they should get enough first round picks from just those two guys. And the first round picks and the second round picks, they should have a boatload of draft picks from those two guys alone that they could completely start over, kind of like how Miami did. But realistically, because of the situation, I don't think they're going to get as much. So now how I bring this back to the Eagles. Carson Wentz, there's been a lot of rumors that he wants out, but you haven't heard that key report, which is him publicly saying he wants out. There's still this like mystery that maybe he's coming back, maybe he's going to get traded. I think the way that you're seeing these names fly off the board here, I think that teams around the league are already basically working the phones, working the wires, and these things are already setting up. And there's a lot of little puzzle pieces along the way, little breadcrumbs along the way, that if you look at them, you can say, well, this is really signaling the future of these franchises. Now, when Matt Stafford got traded, Jared Goff got traded, one of the biggest teams that everybody was talking about as a possible destination for Matt Stafford was the Indianapolis Colts. Now, the Indianapolis Colts, if they were interested, obviously, nobody really ever heard any. I know I personally didn't hear anything about any possible workings that were close to being done. It just sounded like there was somebody that was hot on the seat. I think Carolina was one of the other big teams that was said to be really in hot pursuit of Matt Stafford. But I don't ever really remember hearing the Colts. So the Colts, I don't think they're just sitting on their hands. I think that one of the positional coach hirings that they made recently is a definite tell that they are in on Carson Wentz, and that's Press Taylor. Press Taylor got picked up by the Colts. He was a guy who for several years, when it came to Carson Wentz, there was a lot of rumors that him and Carson Wentz were too close, that they were too buddy-buddy, and that's why Press Taylor was never really able to coach Carson hard. And that was something that came up several years ago when it came to criticism articles coming out about Carson Wentz. So, that was a big thing too. When the Eagles fired Doug Peterson and they started over their coaching staff, I was paying particular attention to that, to Press Taylor, who was on the Eagles roster last year, who was on the Eagles coaching staff last year. I was paying particular attention to him to see what would happen, because if the Eagles really wanted to make good with Carson Wentz, they would have retained him. If you have a quarterback, you're seeing all these big name quarterbacks forced their way out of situations or getting traded in the offseason and stuff like that. If you don't want to be one of those teams, if you really don't want to be one of those teams and you just fired your head coach, I think that at the very least you go to Carson and say, look, we want your input on this or this. And one of the biggest positions would be quarterback's coach, the person that he's going to work with the most. I mean, a major, obviously Deshaun Watson is one of his biggest issues when it came to why he all of a sudden he wants out of Houston. A large part was because when they hired the GM that he didn't have any input on. He's the big star of that team. He was tired of them being run poorly. He probably wanted more say or more input on that, and they didn't give it to him, so boom, he wanted out. That's pretty much how the story went publicly. I don't know how much of this stuff happened behind the scenes. I don't know how upset he was when they traded DeAndre Hopkins, obviously. That was probably the first big thing that happened that probably wasn't reported on nationally too much. But once once that happened, that's really when it became public that Deshaun Watson wanted out, once they hired a GM that he had no interest in, and he just doesn't like the direction the team is going. So Carson Wentz here is essentially... he gets benched. He's not happy about it. Reports are coming out several weeks in a row that he wants out of Philadelphia, or he potentially wants out of Philadelphia, yada, yada, yada. We don't know what's true, what's false. But these things are coming out. So obviously, there's also a report that, Howie Roseman, the GM of the Eagles, went to Zach Ertz and talked to him about how to try to mend things with Carson. So there's all these reports coming out that there is definitely, there's definitely friction. They're definitely not all on the same page. They're definitely not a happily married couple. And at the end of the day, now you just fired his boy. You basically just fired his best man. Let's just put it that way. Like you guys are on the rocks. And Howie Roseman said, well, you know what? I know that we got to come together here, but you got to get rid of this guy. I'm trying to make a poor analogy, but ultimately at the end of the day, Press Taylor was supposed to be somebody that was really close to Carson Wentz, and boom, he's gone. So, that's something that immediately you should say, I wonder what Carson Wentz thinks about this. So then the Eagles hire a new coach, and essentially it's, a lot of people thought that when they hired Sirianni, that his connection to Frank Reich, and obviously Frank Reich and Carson Wentz had a lot of success together when they were here together. A lot of people immediately suggested that, well, Sirianni's going to come here. He's going to mend defenses. He's from the same cloth as Frank Reich. So they're trying to bring that back together. I don't know about that, because the next move when it came to position coach that they hired, the quarterback's coach, probably the most important position that affects Carson Wentz. His own coach in the room, in the quarterback room, in film study, when it's just the quarterbacks in the room, turned out to be a guy who is essentially related to Jalen Hurts. I mean, this is a guy who is a family friend, a longtime family friend of Jalen Hurts. He tried to recruit him. Obviously, he didn't go. Obviously, Jalen Hurts was, you know, he tried to recruit him. I think it was to Mississippi State. But Jalen Hurts, when you get an offer to go to Alabama, I mean, what do you think is going to happen? So he went to Alabama, but ultimately, he's that close of a family friend. I think that the story is that his father, I think Jalen Hurts' father was the high school coach of Brian Johnson, which is the name of the Eagles' new quarterback coach. So there's so much connecting these two. They obviously have a relationship. Brian Johnson's been a family friend of the Hurts family since he's known him since he was 4 years old. Things like this are all like, wow. Like, typically, you know what I mean? Like, I don't really even know if this opportunity, it's a very good hire. Even if he didn't have any connection to Jalen Hurts, I think that when you look at what he did as the offensive coordinator of Florida last year, I mean, that offense, you know, it's produced some really talented players now, and I think the offense was really doing well. That's a great hire. That's a guy that if he would have stayed in college would probably be a head coach somewhere, but he's coming up. He'll probably be an offensive coordinator in the league soon. Like, that's a really good hire. But you almost wonder if this connection would have been possible if it wasn't for Jalen Hurts. And if that connection for the Eagles staff, because there's no connection necessarily between Sirianni and you know, Brian Johnson. There's a connection between Jalen Hurts. So if, and you know, that's one of the biggest mysteries too, this offseason, is what took so long for the Sirianni press conference that a lot of people were so critical about. That was essentially a disaster. What took so long for that to happen? I mean, it took like over a week for it to happen. I have a couple of theories on that. Number one, when you see how poorly Sirianni handled the press conference, I do think that there was a lot of coaching and a lot of PR work done behind the scenes, because it's one thing to be a good football coach, and we don't know what Sirianni is, but it's another thing to be able to handle the media in Philadelphia. And he failed his first test. I'm not too critical about it. I mentioned this in a previous podcast where I had my concerns going from the small markets of Indianapolis and the small markets of San Diego, which is where he basically was his last two stops. I thought it was going to be a big, you know, it's very different to come to Philadelphia. And he kind of got saved from a little bit of it because of COVID being what it is. There wasn't a huge crowd there. There wasn't a lot of reporters there. It was pretty much just him in front of like a camera crew talking to one reporter at a time on a, you know, like a video call or something like that. So he didn't even get the full brunt of it yet. He didn't even get the full audience, you know, after a loss, whatever. He has a long way to go when it comes to that. And I, you know, like I said, I don't really care. I mean, he could come up there and if they win every game, he could come up there and be, you know, gnawing on a shoe for all I care. I mean, he could be a complete, moron. Look at Bruce Arians. I think Bruce Arians is a bit of a dope. But if you look at what he's done, I mean, obviously Tom Brady carried him. I don't want to say he carried him. Obviously he played his part, but I mean, he got the Super Bowl essentially on Tom Brady's back and a lot of the additions that they made. I can't say that. Bruce Arians is a good coach. I'm trying to redirect this. He's a good coach, but at the end of the day, he's a dope who keeps putting his foot in his mouth over and over and over, when in reality, you should kind of take the approach that, dude, just sit back and let Tom Brady carry to your ring. You know what I mean? That's pretty much how it is. And he's out there criticizing Tom Brady from the very first week, which is just is incredibly stupid. You know, I mean, you can be an idiot, but as long as you're a good coach, that's all that really matters. So if Sirianni puts his foot in his mouth every single press conference, I don't think any Eagles fan will care. And the questions will get easier and easier and easier as he wins. So if he keeps winning, which he hasn't won anything yet, but if he keeps winning week after week in the NFL, Eagles fans won't care what his answers are anyway. But ultimately, you know, it doesn't really matter. It's just a press conference. It's an introductory press conference. It's not a good look. I mean, I remember Doug Peterson's introduction press conference where he was trying to defend a really stupid call which basically cost them, I don't want to say cost them a playoff game, but he tried to defend his play calling in the Chiefs' loss to the Patriots, and it was kind of an inexcusable defense. He was trying to defend essentially running clock while being down two touchdowns. Like, it was a real, and he tried to defend it. He tried to turn around, but it's like, I don't remember anything that Nick Sirianni said that was as big a gaffe. That was one individual moment that you kind of held on to, like that moment in Doug Peterson's introductory press conference. But at the end of the day, they were both bad press conferences, and a lot of people were losing their brains when Doug said the things that he said to when he started his Philadelphia career. So I don't really think it matters. Everybody hated the Doug Peterson hiring. I don't really think a ton of people hate the Sirianni one. I think the biggest one everybody's talking about right now, the biggest issue everybody's talking about, is they're calling Sirianni a puppet, which I just don't get, because there's no way to know that. He is in the same position that Doug was, where he has to come out and toe the company line. That's just part of being part of a team. He's one of the faces of it. That's his job. He's going to come out there and he's going to reiterate a lot of the same, a lot of the same company words that, you know, Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman are telling him to say. He has to do that, especially when it comes to things like Carson Wentz, like the possibility of trading him. Is he going to be here? Yada, yada, yada. All those things, you can't give your hand, you can't tip your hat to what the organization is really thinking. The Eagles want to keep the value of Carson as high as possible. And to do that, you really have to, you have to be vague to the media for one thing, because it's a poker game. All these GMs are playing poker games. If he comes out there and they ask him, like, what do you think about Carson Wentz? He's like, he sucks. Like, what do you think is going to happen? Do you think that they're going to get anything for him in a trade? No, he has to come out and he basically has to play it like, look, I got two great quarterbacks. I can't wait to work with both of them, which is exactly what he said. If he came out and he said that, you know what, Carson Wentz is my guy, we're gonna ride and die with him, then it's gonna have the exact same opposite effect. Like, what if they want to trade Jalen Hurts? What if they're deciding that, you know, we're gonna take whatever we can get for either one of these guys because we can't have two? You can't really come out and say either one of those things. And the media members know this when they're asking them these questions, but they're asking because they're poking for holes. They're poking. They're prodding. They're trying to find anything that's a good soundbite. They're trying to find anything that's a good clipping for a story. Anything that's a good headline. And they do their best, which I don't think Sirianni really did that bad, because he didn't give any of those things up. So at the very least, he did that. Although there was a couple of things that he said that definitely, like, he wouldn't name a starting quarterback. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of big, but it's at the same time, it still kind of toes the company line. But if you wanted to keep Carson Wentz, that probably would have been one of the first things. If behind the scenes, if I think it was like 8 days between it was announced that they were hiring Sirianni to the actual press conference. In those 8 days, aside from coaching up Sirianni about what he needs to say and how he needs to do all that stuff in front of the media, I think one of the other big things was, I think they were trying to find out where Carson Wentz and Carson Wentz's camp was at, so they could find out how they were going to project this to the audience. Which essentially, if Carson Wentz was on board, I think they would have came out and said, like, yeah, he's a starter. You know what I mean? But I think that behind the scenes, Carson Wentz is still like, look, I went out. There's plenty of things that are pointing to that behind the scenes as well. Like I said, Brian Johnson being hired. You know what I mean? Like, when you have, like, essentially nepotism there. You hired a guy that's almost related to Jalen Hurts. Like, it's that close. You know what I mean? So what makes you think that that's going to be the hiring? And guess what? Now we're going to trade Jalen Hurts and Carson Wentz is going to be the guy. Like, none of that adds up. It makes way more sense that behind the scenes they were talking to Carson and they were talking to Jalen to try to find out what the future was going to be and how much these guys were willing to do this and willing to do that and work this out. And I think that they came up to the conclusion that Carson Wentz is probably best to move on. And that's why they said, okay, we're going to let Press Taylor go and hire Brian Johnson. I think it's that easy. I don't think you have to look into it any deeper than that. I think you can look at those hirings, the fact that he went and then got hired by Indianapolis, which is essentially probably the biggest, the biggest landing spot for him, the one that makes the most sense. His former offensive coordinator that he had the most success with in Frank Reich. Now they also have. There was also a rumor, by the way, that the Colts were interested in Zach Ertz, which I don't know how much, there's to that rumor. But that rumor came out not too long ago as well, which they were talking about possibly trading Zach Ertz. Zach Ertz is probably gone. I don't think that's a rumor at all. I think cap-wise, Zach Ertz, I don't think he'd want to come back. It's pretty obvious they don't want to re-sign him. This is a huge thing that happened last offseason where he came out and essentially expressed his disappointment that he didn't get a new contract in the offseason after Travis Kelce did. And I think that the Eagles essentially were glad that they didn't do it, because now they're so cash-strapped against the cap. I think now that they're essentially just going to try to trade Ertz and get what they can get Ken for him. So if to the Colts with, not necessarily at the same in the same transaction with Wentz, but if they were to trade him to Indianapolis, needs a tight end, even if Carson Wentz stays. I mean, that's still a good landing spot for both of them, if not just one or the other. But ultimately, that's pretty much how I look at it. Like, that's a really good connection there. And I think that, that's part of the issue, too, is if you look at the Stafford versus Goff, when you have a trade that went down the way that it was, pretty lopsided. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't apples for apples, quarterback for quarterback, if the Rams had to send two firsts and a second, which I think was the reported amount, to the Lions to take Jared Goff. I mean, that's essentially what it looks like. That makes you wonder, if Carson Wentz were to be traded, is he more Matt Stafford or is he more Jared Goff? And I think that there's so many comparisons to make to Goff, not Stafford. I mean, Jared Goff was in the same draft. They were both drafted 1 and 2. Jared Goff has the same up and down history. Jared Goff has the same salary cap issues. So to me, it makes sense that the Eagles are probably going to have to trade something with Carson Wentz to move him, to move his contract. Because I think everybody knows, no matter how much the Eagles would like to try to hide it, is their salary cap is a joke. And no team is going to just bite that. Oh, yeah, they just, you know, they're going to all know that part of getting rid of Wentz is part of solving the salary cap issue as much as it is moving on from a bad situation. Because ultimately, Wentz just wasn't working out here. And there's a lot of questions you could ask about Carson Wentz, about his health, which is a deterrent from a lot of teams. I know he hasn't had an issue last year. He didn't really get hurt at all. He played every game he was asked to play until he got benched. But there are, you know, issues that, you know, he had an ACL. He obviously doesn't look like the same athlete since the ACL. He had a back injury, which obviously didn't flare up since. But he also has the concussion. And if you look at the way he played last year, I haven't heard a lot of people suggest that maybe there was some lingering effects of that concussion, because he played horribly last year. Something was wrong mentally with him. And that's something that maybe that was the issue. Maybe the Eagles are aware that he has a concussion issue, because it's unexplainable when you look at some of the tape of him playing last year and some of the wide open throws that he was missing and some of the wide open reads, pre-snap reads that he wasn't seeing. There was hesitation. There were so many things, and it could be something simple like, you know, he was getting hit a lot and he was getting rattled, and, you know, it could be something simple. You know what I mean? But it could also be something major. It could be something that the Eagles knew about, and that's why they drafted Jalen Hurts. That's why they decided to get an insurance policy. We don't know what happened behind the scenes, but there is a definite connection between Jared Goff getting hurt this last year in the playoffs and essentially just getting hurt at the wrong time, getting hurt at the most important time and not being able to deliver. Even though it's not necessarily his fault that he got hurt at the end of the season, that's what happened, and you could say that he cost the Rams another season. Same thing with Wentz. It wasn't necessarily his fault that he got hurt at the end of the season the last couple of years, but at the end of the day, that's what you're playing for. You're playing for Super Bowl. That's what the Eagles organization wants, and Carson Wentz has shown a repeated issue where he just gets hurt towards the end of seasons. That's not something you want leading your team. You can't really build around that. So there's way too many connections between Jared Goff and Carson Wentz that makes you think that the Eagles are probably going to be on the side where they're going to have to give up something to move him. And that's been an issue for them, because they probably were in that boat to get rid of Alshon Jeffrey, which they never did. They are probably in that same boat to get rid of a lot of players that you wondered, like, why wouldn't they just try to move on now rather than linger and let this guy stay here and absorb cap and absorb space. I think the same thing about Nelson Aguilar. There was a lot of people that through two off seasons in a row before Nelson Aguilar actually left via free agency, that there was a lot of rumors that they were trying to trade Nelson Aguilar at the Senior Bowl. And 2 years in a row, it didn't happen. At least the last year, I was all for it. He was on a contract for about $10 million for a year. And I was like, I'd rather have that $10 million if you weren't going to bring Nelson Aguilar back. I'd rather have that $10 million roll over. And that would have been nice to have now, because instead of being like $50 or $60 million over, they'd be $10 million less, which might solve a lot of issues. But there's been a lot of instances like that where the Eagles have basically, if you treat them like the stock market, where they got left hole in the bag, especially with Alshon Jeffrey, especially with guys like Vinny Curry in the past, where they just held that contract. It was a horrible contract, but they couldn't do anything with it. They've lost in those scenarios. They've lost a lot of times playing poker with guys and basically just crapped out, where they got stuck with that player. They couldn't move him. And I think that this is going to happen again with Alshon Jeffrey this year. I don't know. Maybe they could trade DeSean Jackson. It's really hard to say. The guy's been hurt so many times, but maybe they could trade him for a very late round pick. I really doubt it, though. Most teams are smart enough to know the Eagles are going to have to move on and cut him. But there's a million different instances like that where the Eagles just didn't maximize their salary cap opportunities. They just couldn't move a guy. So I think that that's pretty much what's going to happen now. And I think that if they do decide to trade Carson Wentz, which I still think the writing's on the wall. When I saw those quarterback hirings, I was like, well, this is a very direct connection that Carson Wentz is probably going to the Colts, because these things get done behind the scenes even before they get announced. They might be working out the fine print right now, because the Eagles can't wait. They got to move on it. Once the new league year starts, I think they start owing money, and they don't want to do that. They got to get out from under their money. So I think they're lining that up. I think he's going to go to the Colts. I think that's a pretty good guess based off of those hirings, based off of the rumors with Ertz, and I think that Ertz could also go there. I don't know if that would be how they would do it. I don't know if they would trade Ertz and Wentz. I mean, just imagine that, though. The Colts had a really good team last year. One of the better defenses in the league. They had their offense is pretty good. I think that you could look at Phillip Rivers. I mean, the running game is great. They have some really strong receivers, young guys too, like Michael Pittman coming up. I mean, T.Y. Hilton could be gone. Who knows? I think they have some good. I think they have some money too. So that would be a really good connection. If they bring back T.Y. Hilton, which I can't imagine why they wouldn't bring him back, considering that he's been there so long. Why wouldn't he want to retire there? Although he gets hurt all the time, so maybe they won't even want to give him that opportunity. But they have some good young weaponry, and if you add Carson Wentz and you add Zach Ertz, I mean, you're solving a lot of issues. They have one of the best offensive lines in the league. They have one of the better running games. They have like two, three deep at running back right now. I mean, that would be a great position for Wentz. And if Frank Reich can reel him in, if he can, you know, basically get him back on the MVP track, I mean, that could be a team that could be pushing for a Super Bowl. Carson Wentz, you know, in Indianapolis might look like Andrew Luck did in Indianapolis. We don't know. But at the end of the day, that's probably what they would be hoping for. And I do think that Frank Reich probably, you know, I mean, he worked with Wentz. You know what I mean? So he's got to know what the guy is. It's not like there's a lot of rumors going around about, you know, his work ethic and his attitude and his behavior. But Frank Reich knows all of it because he was in the building with him. So if anybody would say, like, yeah, I'm not worried about that, and they want to look at this as an opportunity to basically get something for pennies on a dollar. I mean, look what the Eagles had to do to get up and get Carson Wentz when they drafted him. They traded Byron Maxwell and DeMarco Murray. They also traded with Kiko Alonso. It was Byron Maxwell and Kiko Alonso to the Dolphins to move up from 13 to 8. That was just to get to 8. That's two guys that didn't really do a ton, but still, they're marketable names. They were names of players that most people would think that you would want. Then they traded DeMarco Murray for the first pick in the fourth round to the Titans, who also got to a Pro Bowl when he was in Tennessee. Then they traded that plus, you know, multiple first, seconds and all that to move up from 8 to 2. I think they gave up 2 firsts, and I don't know if it was 2 seconds and a third. It was a boatload of picks. I don't know the exact amount, but it was all those players and then all those picks just to move all the way up from 13 to 2 to get Carson Wentz. Now the Colts, and I'm sure Frank Reich probably did his homework on Carson Wentz when he was in Philadelphia, who saw the potential, who saw the ability of this guy to be an MVP caliber player. Now he's looking at it like, well, I might be able to get Carson Wentz for a late first, and then I also get Zach Ertz, who last year was hurt all year, but the year before that had a Pro Bowl season. So you got to look at it like, I mean, if Frank Reich knows his stuff and he's confident in his abilities, he probably looks at this situation and says, like, I can really bolster my team here and it won't cost me a lot. I don't even know if they'd have to give up a first. They might only have to give up like a second or something. I mean, realistically, if this is how the Colts are going to handle it, they could really get this. Like I said, they could get a number two, you know, Pro Bowl caliber, Pro Bowl potential player for dirt cheap, the price that he originally costs. And I think that both teams would be for that, because then the Eagles could move on with Jalen Hurts, which is, I think, it really looks like that's what they want to do now. The other big name that could possibly move is Dak Prescott, who's set to be a free agent unless the Cowboys tie up every single penny they have available by franchise tagging him again, which I think is also a very interesting situation, which obviously affects the Eagles. So those are like the big names that still could fall. Carson Wentz, Deshaun Watson, Dak Prescott. You could probably add Sam Darnold in there. And I think that there's a ton of teams that really need quarterbacks right now too. So it's going to be interesting. But like I said, I mean, you could see the connection coming together between the Eagles and the Colts, between the rumors, between the connections of the former coach that was here, between the connections of you know, the coaches that have been hired, the assistant coaches, the position coaches, the quarterback coach on both teams. It's very easy to look at this situation and say, like, this is just lining up too perfectly. These guys aren't hiding it very well. You know what I mean? If he does end in Indianapolis, as I'm stuttering my words, if he does end up as a Colt, I think the writing was on the wall from a couple days ago. And I think that that's what's going to happen. I do think that the Eagles are in a good position with Jalen Hurts. He showed enough. You know what I mean? Like, what do you expect from a guy to show in 4 starts? That, I mean, it would have to be, how many guys come in their first 4 starts in the NFL and just light the league on fire? I mean, even this last season, we all saw Justin Herbert essentially looked like a potential star in the making, but it didn't happen right away. I mean, I was watching what was like a second or third game against the Chiefs, and you could see there was something there, but he wasn't lighting it up. He wasn't, you know, throwing for 400 yards. Like, it's almost like, what were people expecting from Jalen Hurts? His first game was amazing. His second game, too, against the Cardinals, against Kyler Murray, was amazing. And then you saw kind of go downhill a little bit. I mean, he still, you know, I still think he showed enough promise from a rookie that had no offseason, that had a lot of people when he came into the league said that he was a couple years away from playing. He was a very raw prospect as far as a thrower. I think he looked good in all aspects. You could look at enough positives from what he did in the short amount of time that he played this last year and say, that's a guy I would definitely like to see what he could do. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like, you know, you can tell when a guy can play, you can tell when a guy can't play. And Jalen Hurts showed he's a guy that can play in the league. You know what I mean? It's not that hard to say that he's a guy that can play in the league. Is he a franchise quarterback? We don't know that yet. But he definitely showed that he's a guy that can play in the NFL through just the four games, and then obviously played some snaps throughout the entire year and some, you know, obviously weird packages, you know, when they were just trying to get him into the game, sprinkle him into the game. So he played all year. He has his ups and downs just like any other rookie. I mean, Russell Wilson, if you look at his stats through his first four games in his NFL career, I don't think he even broke the 200-yard mark. I think the most passing yards he had in one single game in his first four starts, I think was 160 or 180 yards. So it's like you can look at situation, you can look at, you know, and I think that's a great comparison for Jalen Hurts, because Russell Wilson is that great leader, that clean cut guy. He's a mobile quarterback just like Jalen Hurts is. I think that's the perfect comparison. And that's really when I think of Jalen Hurts, I think of, you know, stand up guy, great leader, a guy that can lead the troops, can lead the huddle, a leader of men. I think all those intangibles when it comes to Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts also reminds me a lot of Dak Prescott in that regard. I think Dak Prescott doesn't have the physical ability. I think Jalen Hurts is a much better, has much more physical ability than Dak Prescott, but I mean, I think he throws a better ball. I think he's a better athlete. Obviously, Dak Prescott, you know, he's done a lot in this league, but I think that those are your comparisons when you think of Jalen Hurts. If you can get a Dak Prescott or you can get a Russell Wilson, I think that's the scale. I think that Dak Prescott's the floor, and I think Russell Wilson's the ceiling, and that's obviously lofty. I think he'll be somewhere in between those guys. But you can't ask for more. I mean, Jalen Hurts just looks like, to me, he just looks like a great prospect. I'm happy that the Eagles have him, and I think that I'm comfortable enough with the Eagles moving forward as him as the guy. And it's more than just, you know, I don't know if he'll ever, I don't know if Carson Wentz will bounce back and be the guy that he was. I don't know if Jalen Hurts will be better than him, you know, 5 years from now, or who will be the better quarterback. But it's the same argument that people made with Nick Foles. When the Eagles traded Nick Foles, a lot of people were like, look, keep Nick Foles. You can keep him for like a reasonable deal. Like you probably could have kept Nick Foles for like $20 million or less to stay in Philly and be the starting quarterback. And then you could have spent that additional money and built a great team around him. That's always the argument. Can you win Super Bowls with this guy? Or is this guy going to carry you to a Super Bowl? And I think that when they looked at Carson Wentz, they were like, well, this is a guy that could possibly carry us to a Super Bowl, make everybody around him better, even though obviously that didn't happen. He hasn't been doing that. And then you had Nick Foles where they were like, well, Nick Foles won a Super Bowl because he had a great team around him. I mean, it was, you know, he obviously won the Super Bowl. He played great in the playoffs and in the Super Bowl. But when you look at it, big part of the reason that they won that Super Bowl is because they had a great team around him. They had a great defense. They had a great run game. And they had pretty good receivers back then. And I think that that is the formula that you could try to copy with Jalen Hurts. I think that even if he doesn't turn out as good as Carson Wentz potentially does, or if Carson Wentz goes to Indianapolis and he, you know, say Carson Wentz plays at a Pro Bowl level under Frank Reich again. I don't know if that Jalen Hurts has to do that. All that really matters is, will we be winning games? Because we haven't been winning games with Carson Wentz the last couple of years, really. I mean, they were 5-7 when he essentially got benched for you know, Nick Foles in 2018. I mean, I know everybody remembers he had a back injury, but he played with that back injury for at least a month. So obviously, he could have played through it if the season wasn't over. They thought the season was over, so they benched him. They put him on ice. They said they said he was ineffective. They said that he was, and he wasn't. The same way he was ineffective this last season, he got benched. There's been multiple times throughout history, whether it's because of an injury, the back injury, or maybe that was just used as an excuse, or you know, basically this last season we just played like crap, and who knows, maybe it was a concussion syndrome. Who knows? We don't know what this make of, you know, there could be some lingering injury issues between the ACL, between the concussion he got at the end of last season. There's no way of knowing why he's playing so poorly, but there's a lot of, you know, there's two seasons at least where he got pulled because he was ineffective. One season was injury related. The other season was not. The injury related season was because they had a Super Bowl MVP on the bench. You know what I mean? They thought the season was over, and obviously they weren't mathematically eliminated because they made the playoffs. But since, you know, it was a situation where they tried to have their cake and eat it too. They tried to say, Carson's too hurt. We're going to bench him and we're going to just ride it out with Nick because Carson's hurt. But I didn't 100% buy that. It was partially both because Carson didn't even go on IR that year. You know what I mean? He was still on the roster. He was still, I don't remember if he was dressing up in those games or if he was, I don't think he was dressing, but they never put him on IR, which I thought was really weird. So if you're saying that he's that badly injured that he can't play, but then you didn't put him on IR just in case you need him again. It was just a weird situation. So it's not normal. You know what I mean? Like a starting quarterback, if they're hurt bad enough that they can't play at all, they go on IR. It's that simple. And they never did that. So to me, that was a bit of a tell that Wentz probably, if they needed him, say if Nick Foles would have got hurt in the Bears game that they won that year, maybe if Foles got hurt and after they won the game, maybe Carson Wentz would have been starting the following week in New Orleans. So there's, you know, it was always a weird situation. I feel like the Eagles were always walking a tight line where they were, you know, having issues with Wentz behind the scenes where he wasn't necessarily playing as well as he should have been, and they knew that, and they were trying to dance in between, back and forth between two guys, whether it was Nick Foles originally or after Nick Foles was gone when they drafted Jalen Hurts. I think it was the same issue. And I think that's also a big part of the issue why Carson Wentz was like, you know what, these guys are jerking me around here where they're constantly, they're just not, you know, it's just like if you're with a girl a long time, but you're still kind of messing around with other girls. You know what I mean? It's like he wanted that commitment. He wanted that ring on the finger. The Eagles just stayed the player. You know what I mean? They just stay playing with Nick Foles, you know, calling him late night, you know what I mean? Texting him late night, and then boom, out of nowhere, there's this new chick, Jalen Hurts. You know what I mean? Carson Wentz is like, dude, I want out of this. Like, I can't do this. And I kind of understand it. But at the same time, you also have to look at your faults. I mean, you know what I mean? If I'm using that same analogy, it's like, well, maybe you weren't handling your business on your side, which Carson Wentz obviously wasn't. Carson Wentz obviously wasn't playing as good as they expected him to play when they gave him, you know, when they signed him early and they gave him at the time, the record for most guaranteed money in NFL history. So there's plenty of blame to go around. It doesn't really matter though. But ultimately, you know, I'm going to call it now. I think the Eagles are working on the parameters of trading Nick Foles to the Colts. I'm going to guess it now. Put it out into the world based off of these obvious coach hirings, which I think are the biggest key to the puzzle. And I think that most NFL teams that are going to be active in the free agency market, these guys aren't waiting around. These GMs aren't waiting around. These coaches, these owners, they're not waiting around for the season to be over. They're not like sitting at home like, man, I can't wait to watch this Super Bowl and then I'll get to work. No, they're out there working now. All of them. They're all out there, especially since, you know, there's no combine this year. I don't even know if there's a virtual one. That is typically when all the NFL movers and shakers get together and they make all the deals. You know what I mean? That's it's not supposed to happen that way. They're supposed to wait until the free agency, the tamper period opens up. That's all BS. It's all BS. These guys' agents are already out there working the phones, trying to find out what's going to happen with their clients. And it just is what it is. It's the nature of the beast. So since there is nothing like that this year, I think that these guys are getting the jump on it even earlier. And I think that it's all pretty much getting worked out right now behind the scenes. So you just have to read the tea leaves here. So without a doubt to me, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with Deshaun Watson. That's a weird one. I couldn't tell you. I'm not as in tune with that. I could see, I mean, there's so many great places. If he went to New England, if he went to San Francisco, those guys are immediate Super Bowl contenders. But I keep hearing the Jets, which is kind of a really weird one. Look at the Dolphins. There's people, the Dolphins are, that's a really interesting one. They're openly questioning, by benching Tua. You know, a lot of people are taking that they're questioning what they have in Tua. You know what I mean? Like, that could be what if they swap Tua, Deshaun Watson, and a lot of the assets that they've accrued from trading a lot of their, they could give the Texans back their number three pick, which they might want. The Texans, if they just got back the number three pick, maybe they use that, which obviously they gave to the Dolphins for Larry Metunsil. If they get back the number three pick, that's an obvious spot for a quarterback. This is a great quarterback draft. They're going to need one. So that would be a great addition right there. So maybe that's where he goes. Maybe they swap Tua in the third for Deshaun. And, obviously they probably had to send more. But there's so many places he could go. You can guarantee that Deshaun Watson is not going to stay in division, though. That's one of the reasons that I'm really saying that, you know, Carson Wentz to the Colts makes a lot of sense, because the Texans are not going to trade Deshaun Watson in division to the Texans or to the Colts. They're not going to do that. So that's even one less quarterback. Dak Prescott to the Colts, that's another one. Maybe that could happen. I don't think anybody's going to be willing to offer Dak a huge contract, though, based coming off of that injury. I think that the opinion of Dak Prescott around the league, he has a positive, a lot of people have a positive opinion of him, a positive view of him, but I don't think that you can look at Dak Prescott and what he's done. I think that he's kind of in that same Jared Goff, Kirk Cousins realm. I don't think that he's a guy that, especially coming off of this injury, that teams are going to go and throw a ton of bank at. You know what I mean? So the Cowboys are actually, they're negotiating from a good spot. I think Dak, in his heart of hearts, coming off of a major injury especially, wants to stay in Dallas. So I think that's going to happen. I think he's going to come down to a reasonable number. And I think ultimately he'll stay there. But I don't really see a connection, if he doesn't, to go to Indianapolis. So the Colts are kind of in a spot where they're too far back to draft a guy. And there's a lot of good names. I mean, they could get Sam Darnold from the Jets, maybe. I don't know. I mean, there's definitely some options. But I think the one that makes the most sense is Carson Wentz. And I feel like it's going to happen. So I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to end the podcast there because that's really the meat and potatoes of this podcast, is where's Carson Wentz going to go? And that's my thought on it. Before I end this podcast, though, if you're still listening here, I don't know how to do this, but if you could figure that out by giving me a 5-star rating to try to help this podcast along, I'd really appreciate it. If you're one of the dozens of people that are listening to this podcast now, because this is still a very small podcast, if you want to do your part to pump this up, do me a favor, try to find out how to do a 5-star review. That will help to spread the word of the Philadelphia Eagles Talk podcast. That's really what I'm trying to do here, because I do feel like this is a pretty good pod. I feel like I'm moving along pretty good here. I'm pretty happy with the content that I'm pumping out. So if you are too, do me a favor, hit the 5-star review. Other than that, I'm gonna go ahead and end the podcast. This has been Philadelphia Eagles Talk, and I'm your host, Kevin Woodman. Until next time, thanks for listening.